Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Weird in High School. I'm just hanging out, waiting for life to change, waiting for some difference, waiting to find out if I got into school. But I am joined this week by Chris Acker. Chris definitely falls under the category of a dream guest. I have been deep into his catalog for a while. I love his song Walking, because I love walking, and I don't need a reason. That's in the song. But I strongly encourage you checking out Chris's stuff. Go a little deeper than just the top on Spotify. Dig into it. He's got lyrical diversity, and it's all wrapped up in kind of a lighthearted and self-aware package. There's a little bit of choppy audio in this episode. Chris was talking to me from the back of his Plymouth Voyager on the road, so forgive some of the chop in the call there. Also, there's a little bit of noise from Dave the Cat banging on the door, but bear with it. Chris has all sorts of cool stuff to say, and thank you to Zach Bryson for helping me get connected with Chris. Without further ado, please enjoy this chat.
I feel like it's crucial to establish the old minivan. I've had a long line of old minivans in my life, and unfortunately I'm not currently in possession of a minivan, but what does a minivan mean to you?
I mean, it originally meant just like the cheapest vehicle I could find, and now it's become like, not to hype it too much, but it's almost at this, in my mind, like a mythological status of this van is like I've had it for like 5 years, almost put 100,000 miles on it, and it's at like, it just crossed over 300,000 miles. I've taken it across the country like 5 times, down and back, up the coast and down multiple times. Like, it's I think broken down on me like one time. It really defies all odds, and cosmetically it's falling apart. Like I have a tapestry looking ceiling, because it's all falling down, and it kind of feels like a shady like hookah lounge in here. And there's like a broken, the rear view mirror on the right side is just off. It's hanging off. And then the cigarette lighter that acted as the phone charger port is broken. A lot of stuff is totally toast. But it doesn't even like stutter when it starts up. It just keeps going. And here we are with broken windshields and a broken broken windshield and a broken window wipers. And we're going through a torrential downpour with Rain-X, and it's still going. So I guess to answer the question, I don't know how much editing you'll do, but to answer the question, I guess it means resilience, and also believing against the odds. Because also, here's another thing. People are always like, is the van going to make it? And they've been saying that for like 5 years. And it's just like, yes, it is, I don't know. It has trumped all odds and left many a foot and many a mouth. So I don't know. It's my carriage. That was a long answer.
Do you feel like there's some analogs between the van against all odds and holding up to 5 years of touring abuse with your career in music?
Yeah. I think there's that's a great comparison. Maybe I'm just much like this van. Is all signs are saying quit, but I won't. All signs are saying stop doing this, but I still start up. So I'll go along with that. I'll say it's the embodiment of my failing music career for sure.
The failing word is interesting to me, because and I talked to Zach about you always forget that you're in someone else's dream, because you kind of have to keep pushing whatever your dream is. Like high school, right? You might not remember when high school, you just wanted to be where you are right now.
So yeah, totally. Totally. And it's a super important thing to remember. And yeah, Zach especially is good at, like, we've been on tour and he's very good at like reminding, but it is also important to like change the goal, you know, where it's like, now it's at a point where I'm like, what can I do to make this a legitimate living? Whereas like before, the dream was just like, whoa, you can go on tour a few times with your band and then come back home and like dishwash and be perfectly happy. And so, yeah, it's like a balance of, for sure, like changing changing the markers of your goals, but then also realizing that like you're pretty much doing exactly what you set out to do, and that just the action of doing it in of itself is an accomplishment, to like not let too much reason get in the way of things, you know.
There's that John R.
Which
Miller,
which I guess
song.
Goes back to the van.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, there's that John R. Miller song where it's the line something to the effect of days on end in a minivan, hoping that someday it'll be worth the miles.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, God, that's funny. I haven't dug that much into him, but I just started to like a few days ago. And what's that song? It starts with a J, I think. What's that song that you just referenced? I forget the name of it.
I think that one is Faustina. I think that one's Faustina.
Okay. Yeah, that is not a J at all. But yeah. Yeah. And it's true. And that's another like interesting concept that I think is fun to talk about is like, to me, that line is like, well, A, I feel it very deeply. And then, but B, there is kind of, I think, a conversation a lot around like paying your dues or whatever. And I try not to subscribe to that too much, because I don't think there's like one right way to like do a music career, you know? And if someone never tours a day in their life, but has good songs and the right ears fall on it, and then they like suddenly do have a career, like I don't think that's any less noble than putting in like thousands and thousands and thousands of miles on a van just to have nothing happen, or maybe eventually have something happen. But certainly if that is the path that you take, the miles and miles in a van one, you are like it's kind of like when you get like, sometimes I'll get a gig that's really good paying, and I have it in my head almost of like, and this also is paying for like the last few years of gigs that didn't pay at all, you know what I mean? Like it's almost like paying a backlog or something in my mind, but I don't know if that makes sense.
I found I had to think about it exclusively as cash in my wallet. Like I had to just, whatever I spent on the record, sunk cost. And the moment I sold one of the CDs, I just had to, in my mind, make that positive $10.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Even though it was so far from it, it had to be like, well, I got 10 bucks in my wallet and I didn't an hour ago.
Right. Exactly. No. And that's, yeah. Because the money that you put into, yeah, like say a record, yeah, you can't think about that as like money you're going to get back, you know? Like that's to me, it's like price of admission. And then after that, yeah, it's just like, yeah, what you said, cash in the pocket, you know?
I think about what you said about even if you don't tour, because that's the thing I hung up on. I planned my first cross Canada tour, which is a bad country to try to tour because you're going, you know, often 600 miles between cities that aren't as big as cities in America. But I planned my first tour for the summer of 2020, so it just never happened. And I live in such a fetishistic zone of the like sleep on the floors, play the gigs thing. But like coming from Calgary, probably the biggest success I have to look up to is Chad Van Galen, who's like famously averse to touring, and he just makes things in his studio, and when Sub Pop asked for a record, he makes it.
Right, right.
So it's interesting that you say that.
Yeah, it's just like, and it's also just that I don't know when that guy started making records, but that's increasingly rare these days, because the only way to sell records really is to tour, you know? So a lot of people won't even fuck with you unless you're doing that. But yeah, I just sometimes like laugh, or like people just be like, man, we've been at this for 15 years and like put so many miles in. And then like you listen to their music and you're like, I don't know. Like, I'm glad that you've been able to do that, but like it's no greater than just like, yeah, a guy that can write really good songs and never leave his house, you know? Like, that's fine.
I find that interesting in this context, and I'm gonna apologize up front to both Mike Venata and Anthony Simpkins if I mix up who shot which videos, but
oh yeah,
the like I discovered you through the walking video.
Cool.
Which was a awesome. Gems video, right?
That was, yeah.
And I find so much of the music I'm listening to now, the music I find the most interesting is coming through these channels, primarily like Western AF and like Gems on VHS. And so I become a full-blown fan of Lost Dog Street Band or of you or of Zax without ever coming within spitting distance of one of your shows. So right. At the same time that, and I feel like in the case of someone like Lost Dog, you can go through their back catalog and see that they got way better. But I feel like good songs, as long as they're made accessible, will find a way. I'm never going to hear a song and be like, I didn't see it live. So I saw Chris play this song sitting on a bed, so fuck that song. No, I'm just like, wow, I love this song.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a little bit of rewind. It's just that, like, yeah, shout out to those guys, because those channels are, like, very much responsible for, like, me and Zach and, like, a lot of people I know. I mean, like, Nick, Shoulders, like, that Rather Low video, like, I mean, they're very much responsible for, like, I think Anthony's, like, responsible for most of Sierra's early traction or anything like that. Like, what they do is, like, a godsend to a, like, otherwise very, very tough time for musicians. And I think the strength of those things is like that it is a chance for us to like, yeah, I mean, literally bring you into my home through those. And there's like some sort of intimacy that comes from that doesn't make it dependent on a live show or anything like that. It's just like, it's like, damn, you got to see you're like a musician you really like the songs of, you got to see them in like the space that they chose, you know? And that's I think the artists also really appreciate that. Like, I don't know, there's been plenty of shows that I haven't like been tired or been my best or anything like that, and like have felt like maybe that wasn't the environment for people to hear the words or to whatever, you know? So it also gives us a platform that we don't have to like sell it super hard, you know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense.
I think in the internet world, we spend a lot of time thinking about, say, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you know, social media, and in ways YouTube is social media, but the thing about YouTube is the engagement is so much more active. When I click on a YouTube video, I have to actively click out of it to get to the next thing and find something else. So it has a chance to capture me. And I think they're, especially when it's done the way that Anthony and Mike do it, those guys are both awesome storytellers, and I've tried to make videos and I'm new to it, but you definitely notice the moment you try how difficult it is to tell the story that way.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think what makes it so, what makes them so great to work with is that, I mean, this is like nothing profound, but it really feels like hanging out. Like they don't, there's no sort of like heavy praise or any, or, but there's also, they're not rude. It's just like, you're truly hanging out, and then they do like two takes, and then you're like, all right, let's go through. It's just, I guess what I'm getting at is it's like a funny thing looking back at those videos, because I feel very comfortable with Mike and Anthony, and like don't ever feel like we're making something that is like quote unquote like timeless or like will be there forever. Like, it's just funny to look at those videos and be like, oh, that was like 15 minutes of a day, and then I kind of like we went and did something else and like got a sandwich, and then that's just like how a lot of people end up hearing your music. It's just like a slice out of your day, and it's super hard to do, but I think how they pull it off is like they treat it like, I don't know, they treat it with the same weight as like, oh, we should go get breakfast, oh, we should shoot that video, oh, we should go to that show. It's just like, I don't know, I think whenever I've made something with them, I don't feel any pressure, I guess is what I'm getting at. But yeah.
Do you feel like acclaim on the internet has translated to actual, I find myself trying to avoid the word financial gain, but that is what I'm meaning to ask about. Do you see that translating into success that actually lets you eat?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it's like, on one hand, it's like those things are, like if I were, of all the people that come to my shows and like come up to me and say how they figured, heard me, it's like either those videos or Mashed Potato Records. So it's like, and then there's a few like word of mouth, but those are like the overwhelming what I hear. So in that sense, yes, because they are the people paying to go to the shows and buying your merch. But, you know, those videos and Spotify listens and stuff don't translate to that much financially. And then, but the other thing too is I think the internet can give you, I'm not too good with numbers. You know, I see a big number and it's like past 20,000. It's until it hits like 50,000 that it's a difference to me. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
or like I just, so you can kind of like inflate in your mind like, whoa, that's got a lot, or like, whoa, a lot of people have watched it, a lot of people have commented or whatever, and then you like think about it and you're like, well, that's like people that like were just on YouTube and maybe watched it one time or and enjoyed it but didn't like really latch on or whatever, and then that's divided over like all over the freaking world. So like on the other hand, it's like the shows I'm playing, it's still like, I'm playing in Springfield on Saturday and it's only 20 seats and like I don't think it's sold out, which is like hilarious. It's like, I would think, like in the vanity of the internet skimming mind, I'd look at that video and be like, yeah, I could sell 20 seats somewhere, and then you're there and you're like, wow, nope. So I don't know, it's like it's a yes and no kind of situation. But
I think like you can't make it purely good or purely bad for those same reasons that you're saying. I think the interesting part of it is without that vessel, like I live in a city that, though the population is nearing 2 million people, we're far away from basically every other city. Like we're like, there's always the joke of how the Canada tour is just Vancouver and Toronto, because those are the two cities within an hour of the border. And
right.
So when you don't live in those cities, you still get all the American culture and all the internet and stuff, but you're used to where you live not being on the tours. So in that respect, I can't imagine what it's like if you enjoy folk music and roots music and you live in the Northern Territory of Australia. Like,
right.
The cool right. thing about the internet is it, especially with the great work that Mike and Anthony are doing and other people, is that, you know, you can be in, you could be living in Alaska and discover this music and get to connect to something, or you could be, you know, whoever. There's probably people in Brazil, I don't know how many, but that like those channels and discover music that way. So that part's really cool, because it wouldn't be realistic to go reach everyone on the ground right. that way.
Totally. I don't have much to add there. It's just, it is pretty amazing to see where it reaches, you know? And for like, yeah, I guess, I don't know, kind of losing my train of thought here, but music, just the distribution of music used to be hyper regional, you know, and anything that expanded beyond a certain region, it'd be like a nationwide radio thing, which leaves out like this gigantic chunk of like mid-level or undiscovered artists. And like, I feel like the internet just kind of fills that gap, you know? There's like a huge gap between the artists that play regionally and then like artists that are able to play nationally, you know? And the internet is kind of the thing that has bridged it for a lot of us to be able to like get out of our region. And then we may also never see some of the places where, you know, there's random people listening because of the internet, but it's like, I don't know. It's fucking cool that they are, you know?
Are you from the Pacific Northwest originally?
Yeah.
So you and I'm just kind of inferring things based on talking to Zach. So you kind of came up in a similar scene to Zach. Is that correct?
So, not exactly. Yeah, I mean, if we're talking like hyper young, like I know Zach came up in like Eugene punk world, which then turned somehow into, well, actually not some, it's not much of a mystery, like punk world into folk punk into just folk into traditional American music. There's like the whole punk jug band Northwest thing. And I know, so through that, Zach got really into traveling, and then I think that's how he first got to New Orleans. And I just grew up like in Seattle and played some music with friends in high school, and then started playing a lot of music in a town called Bellingham, Washington, when I was going to college there really briefly. But yeah, Zach and I have the commonality of the Pacific Northwest, but mostly, and we met in Seattle, but he would visit New Orleans and we talk a lot on the phone. And then when I'd go up and tour there, we'd hang out. But I don't know, we were kind of like a long distance relationship for a long time. And now are again, but actually, if you'll indulge, the story of how I met Zach's really funny. I went to a string band show of a mutual friend of ours, and he was up in Seattle visiting. And he was doing this thing where he was playing air drums in the corner to like make the string band laugh, because it was really funny. Like, there's no drums and string bands.
Yeah.
And it was just like a fiddle player and a guitar player, and he was just like faking the air drums. I thought that was really, really funny. And then after the band got off, I was like, who's that guy? Like, who's your friend? And he introduced us, and then we were like, it was a pretty immediate friendship, but yeah, I think we just talk about that we like agreed that the best John Prine album was Diamonds in the Rough, and then kind of went off from there. But yeah, so to answer the questions, we're both Pacific Northwest, but we didn't we came up in different worlds, and then if there's one world that binded us, it was more the New Orleans thing that brought us together. So
if I, and this is a broad question, but if I tasked you with giving me like a short Wikipedia bio on your rise into music, what would that look like?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Whoa. Ah. No, it's okay. I got a little turbulence. Oh, geez. Something happened. Yeah, man, it is so cush back here. I haven't just like rode in the back of my van in so long. This rules. I'm gonna lay down a bit. Yeah, quick Wikipedia. Steven, I don't know if you know any of this, so you're gonna get quick. Steven's gonna get the quick Wikipedia of my life too. All right, with music, it was basically like I took this creative writing class in high school, and it was probably about like 3 months into me having picked up guitar, and I'd grown up on John Prine and like Nancy Griffith and a lot of that kind of stuff, and through that had kind of started to dip my toes into more of like the Texas 70s stuff, like the Guy in Town stuff, and I think like John Prine's Clay Pigeons cover had gotten me into Blaze Foley. So I was like 15 or 16 and was really starting to like kind of dip my toes into that stuff and wanted to start playing guitar because of it. And I took this creative writing class, and the teacher was like, God, I think one of our first assignments was like analyzing the lyrics of like Hard Rain's Gonna Fall by Bob Dylan or something. Like, it was so up my alley. Like, I kind of, looking back, I like feel sorry for all the other kids in the class, because it was just like, I remember some kids really liked it, but I was just like, it was so up my alley, and the teacher kind of noticed, and got me really into like, introduced me to like Mississippi John Hurt and Billy Joe Shaver, and just kind of like was like, I'm gonna like, I got really lucky, got this music education that coincided with me and my friends, just a small crew of us like getting into music together and starting to hang out at this record store in Seattle that's now gone, called Mossy Bottom Records. So basically like 15 and 16, between a creative writing class and a record store, I got like a unusually good roots American music education, jug band, blues, country blues, folk, songwriter, all that shit. And it was really great. And that was kind of like, I don't know, to me, that's like the main thing that I'm still riding on, is like that, those short years of getting educated and having that coincide with starting to play music with other people. Some of the people, like Sam Galband, we had a high school band together, and we still play together. Like, he still played in my band. And then like after that, yeah, it was like, this is the very spark notey, because that's kind of the most important thing. And then like after that, it was like, I moved to Bellingham to try to go to college and met a bunch of roots musicians up there and dropped out of college. And they were all like traveling kids. And so we started, then I started like hitchhiking around and traveling and like dropping into different towns and busking a bunch and did that for a couple years. And that's what brought me to New Orleans. And then I started busking around New Orleans and decided that I thought the best songwriters were coming out of there at the time. Like, I was really obsessed with like the Deslons and Hooray for the Riff Raff, and so I just was like, this is the place where the best songs are coming from. And basically I hung around until I started getting gigs and shit. So yeah, that's the, but basically the big moments were like high school and New Orleans and some really nice times in between. But yeah.
And so since then, have you stayed hanging around New Orleans? Have you drifted farther, as the rambling tradition tends to?
Not so. I mean, if anything, I stay there. Well, partly because of COVID, but also just in general, I stay there a lot more. And I really love spending time there. And that's like where I live. But yeah, this year I've been getting out more, and I've always like taken time in the summers, to tour, and bring the band out, or go solo. I cover some pretty good ground in like usually the two or so months that I'm out of town. Traveling is kind of a given, and it's something I really like to do. And that I'm very lucky to do, and that I've been doing these kind of, like I said, these like little weekenders where I'm doing like 3 or 4 days for a weekend and coming back home, and those are a lot less stressful. And also, if they get canceled, it's a lot, and I love it a lot. I'm doing it right now and having a blast, thanks to Rain-X. I'm pretty much in New Orleans all the time, and really, really love it there.
With the Wikipedia in mind, if you were to go back to yourself starting out and give yourself any advice, what would that advice be?
Let me think on that. That's a good question. It's funny, this lack of answer has nothing to do with, because I certainly have not done it perfectly. You'd think that I could find a hole in this flailing attempt at music. I don't know, like, man, I wish you'd like texted me that one. I could think about it. Man, I don't know. Shit. Like, I guess like, maybe this sounds cheesy, just like a little more patience. I do like sometimes miss or think back and like the urgency that I was operating out of, I think it's important to say yes to things and not shy away from things, but I put myself in like quite a few situations where I, mostly to do with like traveling and touring, where I put myself up shit creek a lot of times by like booking some haphazard things and then taking a band on the road and then they get all mad because they don't get paid and there's these disastrous tours. I don't know how far back you're thinking, but I wish I just sometimes had, like, maybe this is a disappointing answer because it's cool, but sometimes I wish I had just, like, stayed put a little bit more, you know? Like, I love all the running around I've done, but man, sometimes I've just been in some real freaking shit situations just off of like operating out of a like flight or fight kind of thing. But I don't know, maybe I'll think of something better than that, but that's, I just feel like when I was 20, I was like, I had to make it happen in like a year or two or something. Like, I wish I, yeah, I don't know. And not that I'm like fucking old now. I'm just 28, but I'm just like a lot more patient with things coming slowly. I just beat myself up a lot if things didn't happen quickly. And it's just a really long game. So, yeah, if not patience, maybe more foresight, or just that, like, consistently reminding myself that, like, if I love this, it's something I want to design a way to make it last or whatever. And for a while there, I was not doing it in a way that would last. I felt like I had to make things happen. Like, if this certain thing didn't happen in 2 years, I was a failure or some shit, you know? And it's just like, that's no way to, it's a really easy way to get down on yourself too. So, but yeah, I don't know.
I think that's a great answer because, and it's something I talked to Zach about, is this, I struggle so much personally with that urgency. Like, I already feel like COVID started when I was 21, and in Canada, it's still happening. Like, they're still very much limiting things here. And it's like, fuck, I'm 23. What have I done? That's a fifth of my whole 20s. But the other thing. I want to keep in mind is, like, you know, I want to, it's a really terrible idea that you'd be used up by like 30 or that you miss your window. Like, I really don't want to burn out. I'd love to, like, my dream would be to be like Leonard Cohen made a fucking amazing record when he was 82.
He like, right, exactly.
Made a modern sounding, awesome record. And then died the next year. And it's like, I want to be that, like, that able to create things that matter throughout life.
And I think the exact way to, or I don't know, but like the way to make that is patience. Because I think the other mindset is like, And this is, like, I think from a really dumb idea of, like, a lot of our, like, songwriting idols or something. Like, I mean, it's never good to compare, especially to, like, gigantic people or even suggest that you're in the same league. But, like, you know, it's like you could really get down on yourself if you thought too much about how, like, Neil Young made Harvest when he was 22. You know, like, that could ruin your day. But if you think too much in the mindset of like, I have to do something great before I'm 30, you're probably not going to, you're not thinking in the mindset of like, how do you do anything after you're 30? Yeah. Like, being burnt out is like a much sadder idea.
You know, I spent a lot of like, I was the right age at the right time to like idolize Mac DeMarco. And what I've realized about him is that his career doesn't seem to work past being that age. Like, which I'm not trying to shit on Mac DeMarco. If I don't want to close up any opportunities, if Mac DeMarco wants to like bring me out on tour in the future, I don't mean bad things here, but like, I feel like that at that time when you're that age, you can be like, oh, this is awesome. He's like talking about cigarettes and, you know, watching cartoons and being in your 20s. And then it's like, now that he's older than that, you can't just like, you can't just live on youth forever.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like he's kind of taken a a step away from the world because he just went so fucking hard, you know, for so long. And what's that? Yeah, I'm talking about Steven's wondering if I'm talking about him. Yeah, you went too hard for too long. You're toast. And it seems like he really like intentionally has stepped out of any sort of spotlight because in addition to what you're saying, where like, yeah, the subject matter is very of like a certain age. It's also like he fucking like toured like a 25-year-old, you know, just like years on end of just like shows and shows and shows and shows. And I guess that's another like preservation thing is like, don't be convinced that you have to like run yourself too hard or be out on the road all the time or anything like that, you know?
So I want to, and I'll let you go pretty quick here. I want to ask you a little bit about your songs and not, I'm trying to avoid the like, where do the songs come from question that every podcast has, but I'm interested in your songs. To me, feel like there are some, like there are songs like Big Idea that feel like they come from a sincere heartbreak place, and then they've been wrapped up in a bunch of funny packaging.
Oh,
how true is that?
That's pretty much it. But I don't know. I think there's like an important thing of like taking a step back, and that there's like, what? Oh, just don't hold my mom, don't say any time. Oh, sorry. I had a little bit of scare, almost rear-ended someone. I think it's just like, I'll just tell the story to that song because there's a humor to it that I think I don't put this part of the story in the song, but like, I think it informed, at least the not taking it too seriously kind of thing where, and I tell the story on stage, but just to clarify, we're talking about Big Idea, like that you're saying that there's like a humorous element to that.
To me, all of your songs feel like they contain there's goofy lyricism. There are chains of words where you're subverting things in ways that I find humorous. I'm really trying to not put my foot in my mouth here. But no.
It did sound there like I was like grilling, like, oh, you think that shit's funny? You think it's funny? I did intentionally put in like, yeah, humorous imagery to, because the story with that song, is that, or one of the stories with that song is just that, the person that it's about, I was seeing at this time that I was subletting a room at a house, and the guy I was subletting from was like, hey, I'm coming back he was like trimming weed in California, and wasn't sure when he was going to be back, and he was being very vague about it. And he was like, but then I eventually got word, cause I was going to have to be out of the room when he got back, but he wasn't telling me when he was getting back. And then he messaged me and he was like, when I come back, you can have the room, but I'm going to take my bed, like the bed you've been sleeping on, I'm going to take it. And then, and he still was not telling me when he was going to be back. And then, I was over at my girlfriend's house and she broke up with me. And so I went back to my house, and like in the time that I was over at her house, it was like a half hour, he had come home and like take
can mattress. So like I'd gone from like this one mattress that I was never going to be able to sleep on again, and then went back to my room, like just all I wanted to do was like lay down and cry in my bed. And I opened the door and my room was just empty. And like, that's funny, you know, like that's sad, but it's like, that is funny to me. Yeah. Like, it's one of those situations where like you, it'd be way too self-indulgent to like, be like the laces and the like tripping on yourself. Like, yeah, it's just kind of that. It was a similar feeling of like kind of getting caught, like, I don't know, getting caught with your pants down or something. Like it was, it's, yeah. So with that song at least, and yeah, I try to bring it into a lot of my songs because all the songwriters I admire, like if you're going to talk about heartbreak, like heartbreak comes from, I don't know, there's humor where there's sadness and vice versa. Like if you're going to talk about heartbreak, heartbreak's heartbreaking because it came from a bunch of joy, you know what I mean? So it's like to just focus on like the sad stuff or at least not make it funny a little bit seems like somewhat dishonest to me, you know?
Right.
Like I'm just also not a fan of like super heavy-handed songs. Like Leonard Cohen is about as like heavy-handed as I'll accept. And then past that, like I really don't like self-defeating songs where it's like, you know, the world's against me and like I'm cursed by everything that has happened before me and all this stuff. It's like that stuff's fine, but like, I mean, even Towns was like way funnier than like most everybody else, you know, because if you try to be Towns without humor, you end up being Steve Earle, and no one wants that. and sorry, I don't know if you like Steve Earle. I have a tight hour on him. I don't think I'm ruining any opportunities for myself when I say
Guitar Town.
Yeah, he is the mayor of Guitar Town, though. So, sorry. Anyway, is that's. It's the first thing I feel like I've said that I'm really happy with that answer. The rest I feel like I've been bumbling, but that I'll stand by.
Yeah, I think it's good. We've been going with the flow of connection on the road and Rain-X, et cetera, so it's all good. I think that's, even with Leonard Cohen, I think Leonard Cohen was funny a lot more of the time than people realize.
Oh yeah, don't go home with your heart on.
Yeah.
Like that's like come on. Like yeah, you can't. It's just funny. It's like I think the worst kind of songwriter is the one that like feels like they're doing like a service to the world, you know? Like they need people like us to, and it's like there is truth to it. It's like yeah, I don't know what the world would be without songs. It would totally blow. But I find it's like, it's, I don't know. I guess what I'm getting at is like, don't take the shit too seriously. Like at the end of the day, you're really lucky that you get to be able, or like that you found something that you love this much and that you get to play these songs and go around and doing them. So like I know don't take yourself too seriously is cheesy, but it applies to this where it's just like, you're not like, it's an amazing thing we get to do. We're not saving the world, but maybe we're like helping some people along the way or helping ourselves. But if you want to like convey some sort of like human emotion to connect with people or whatever, which seems like the goal of this whole thing, you shouldn't just like focus on like one element or think that like those things can't exist at the same time. You know what I mean? So
I've been struggling with this concept that like I have some guilt about making my life about music, that it's like, fuck, I should be doing something useful. I should be raising meat or something, you know, like, but at the same time, almost everyone driving a truck or producing food is like, because I have farmed, and all you do in a tractor all day is listen to music. So it's like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there is a utility to like, I still feel like I'm in like recovery for the heartbreak I had when I was like 20. And,
right.
So when you get to listen to like that line, if you can forget, find someone new, I'll do it twice as good as you. It's like, that is, those words describe feelings I've had that I haven't put into words, but also in like a light context, that's really cathartic, right? Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, to that line, and then the other thing you're saying, but yeah, that line too is like, to me, and I don't know how you felt about it. It's hesitant to like say how to think about something. It's like, if you connect it in your way, that's enough. But the, yeah, I like that line because it's like, or why I wrote it. It's just that the, when you're that like very, I feel like it's also a very masculine thing. Just be like, I don't know. Yeah. It didn't hurt me. No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. I'll get over it. Like it's fine. You know, like just the weird subtle flex of being like, oh no, yeah, I'll find someone new. Yeah. Yeah. Then I'll make out way more people than you will, you know, but it's like, it's not how you feel. It's like, it's more of a front than something you actually believe. That's how I meant it. It was like, I definitely didn't believe that to be true.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. And then, but yeah, I mean, yeah, what you're saying about, yeah, like what would be, yeah, when I dishwash, what would I do? I would put on me. It gets people through the day, but it is funny. It's a struggle. Cause you never want to like, it shouldn't be the reason because it's seems a little inflating sometimes to assume like, oh, well, I know somewhere there's someone and I'm saving their day. But it's like, I don't know, maybe people are enjoying you and on their way to work or something, and that's cool, that's enough. But yeah,
and I'm just thinking of like just making it more than, because it's so easy to feel vain about it, at least I do, like I
right,
feel
right.
like entitled and guilty for wanting to do that, and then you, it's like, but if you do it right, and you might take a million shots to get it right. If you do it right, you write, I'll be here in the morning. And then you like to me, one of the best songs ever. And then yeah, it's
pretty
then
perfect.
It's all worth it. Like once
yeah,
you,
yeah.
Then you've given to society what you've taken. I feel even like, like the thing with walking, it's such a simple song, but like I found over the COVID time, all there was to do was go for big walks. So I just listened to books and podcasts and stuff. So just like, that I like walking because I don't need a reason. I was like, that is why I like to go for big walks. I can just be like, I'm going for a walk.
Yeah, no one's going to ask you why.
Yeah, why are you going for a walk? Exercise? Nothing else to do, right? But
right, right. Yeah, totally. Man, yeah, me too, though. Oh, big-ass walks. Big-ass walks. Fist bump to big-ass walks. Yeah, I don't know. It is a constant struggle. It's like, it is a vain pursuit, and what does justify that. But I also think that maybe we think it's more vain than it actually is. I don't know. Cause can't be too much of a coincidence that like, it always fascinates me when like songwriters like why it's a way lower percentage, like musicians and songwriters that have like successful marriages with children and stuff. Not that I'm not saying that's like the goal or anything, but it's just like it does. I guess it just asks a lot of the people in your life, you know, and but I think that's another like a good conversation that I've been having a lot more lately, that like, is becoming less and less true. And I think it's because there's less of an infrastructure for music, and that a lot of us are on our own doing it. So we end up relying on and working with friends and community and stuff. And that's, to me, is what makes it not a vain pursuit, you know, is, and not to even to suggest that you need community in person, but just like the what Anthony and Mike do, and you know, bringing a wider internet community about it is makes it seem less of a selfish thing, because we actually need to like boost each other, because like that's like, that just doesn't, there's no money in music and anymore, you know? And I think people were maybe got away with that in the past a lot more, cause they didn't, and relationships suffered because of it. Cause they were like, oh, I'm fucking set or whatever. You know, I feel like I can't do what I do without like maintaining healthy and good friendships with tons and tons of people. Like the whole reason, like this tour, like when I got COVID a couple months ago, and like made a list of places in the US that I had a contact. And the best advice I ever heard was make friends, not connections. And I didn't list any city where it was like I couldn't, like that I would have to cold call. Like it was all like friends or people I've met over the years that could like get me a gig. And then I booked all these little tours off of literally just, and when I ask for a gig now with these things, I use it as an opportunity to catch up with these people, and I give them a call and we talk for a while and we talk about maybe setting up a show or whatever. But like, I don't know how other people do it, but like, to me, yeah, like I said, like everything I do is like has a lot to do with making good friendships, and the people I see struggling the most are the assholes, which I don't think was true back in the day. Like, it seems like, if I were to generalize, it seems like the people that were doing really well back in the day were huge dicks. And now, like, the people I know that are doing the best are like really, really sweet, kind, considerate people, you know? So
it does seem like, as I get into a lot of these scenes, you discover one artist and you discover another, and then you realize they're all friends with each other. Like, there's a, I can't remember whose video it is. I feel like a Gems video, you doing a duet. And is that Langhorne Slim at the end flipping a record over?
Oh yeah, that is. Yeah, that is. So that's just that was at his house.
Cool. Yeah, that's one of these things that for me, when you see that, you're like, whoa, that's like small world, and it feels almost like you're part of the community, even though you're not. But
you are, you know, and that like, you're the very person that's like bumping it in some way, you know, like what is it if it falls on deaf ears? I mean, it's cool if it falls on nobody, but like. What I'm talking about when I say like the wider internet community, it is people that want to push it that have no alternative agenda, you know, to that. Like, it's like you like it. Like, a lot of the music industry, like pushing is like literal, like paid advertising. Mm-hmm. And then like that's all PR is, you know, it's like straight up paid advertising. And you see labels put like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into like getting one of their artists' face on a fucking Spotify playlist. And like, but what if the song sucks or whatever? You know, like, or just like what affects it more is like, yeah, we know each other and we boost each other up. Nick, for example, like started a label and put me on it and released my shit on vinyl. But then there's like all the people that actually watch it and then share it and then ask you to be on their podcast or whatever. You know, it's like, it is like really cool how it functions outside of a lot of what's happening now. And that why I go back to the asshole thing is like people that aren't ready to be engaged in community of any kind, are kind of the most fucked, unless they are the rare case now where a label wants to put a lot of money behind them. But the fact is there's like no money in music. So, or like labels don't have money. Like labels are broke. And so like to operate under a thing of like, I'm going to be successful musician. And even if that does happen for you and you're just relying on people putting a bunch of pushing behind you, if you're a dick that doesn't want to like, that is making connections before friends, like it's going to be a pretty lonely music career for you, I feel like. But that's, I don't know, that's that.
Sweet. So I'm probably gonna cut us about here, unless there's anything you want to conclude with other than your plug for Rain-X, who's sponsoring you. And
yeah, well, last thing I'll say about Rain-X is Steven has been saying, this has to be one of, I don't even like want to Google it, like it's got to be one of the worst products for the earth, which makes us hesitant to promote it. But like, there's nothing that can work this well, like literally get us through a flash flood. It was raining so hard without window wipers. Like, there's no way that's okay. Like, I don't know how that works. That is magic. That's not even science. That's just magic. That's not, like, how do you just make raindrops go? Like, it's crazy. I think it's just meth. I think they just put meth in a bottle and you rub it on your windshield and everything bounces off.
It's the water comes in contact with the meth and it just can't stop.
Yeah.
And it's then, like, I have to start a business immediately.
Yeah. It gets hyped up and fucking jumps off your windshield. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Weird in High School. I am going to hopefully be back in another couple weeks with another cool episode. I'm doing my best to get this rolling again. It's very nice to talk to people. It's very cool that I'm getting to talk to some people from outside of the borders of the nation of Canada. I don't know why I put so much emphasis into that. I think it was more of a stutter than anything else. I also do have a new YouTube channel called Prairie People. There's one video up there right now of Dakota Dustow playing a great song called Stay. So if you want to check that out, that's Prairie People on YouTube. You know, prairies, those flatlands. You can also find those videos on smokingghostrecordings.com, which is a place where you might be listening to this podcast. Thanks so much again for tuning in, and hopefully I'll see you in a couple weeks.